you and you're going to introduce her. Yeah. You can just...
This is so awkward. Anyway, good morning, everybody. I'm Trisha. I'm an alcoholic. Isn't it a good God Saturday? Yes. So my good friend Melina has picked a reading, and it's from it's on page 25. From There Is a Solution, and it says, there is a solution. Almost none of us. No, second one. Okay, I'm sorry. There is always a solution. Okay. I'm just getting you ready for the day. Okay, the great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we've had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for these for us, which we could never do for ourselves. I would like to introduce my good friend, long time friend, Melina, and you will certainly enjoy what she has to share. Thank you.
I love you too. Can I put this in here? Hold on a second. Hi, I'm Melina Wilson, and I am an alcoholic. Yes, this is going to be a great conference. Woohoo! I'm going to play God for all of you. It's going to be awesome. But every emotion is awesome today. So I'm Melina Wilson. I'm an alcoholic. I have a home group. It's Grateful Hearts in Bellingham, Washington. We meet every Monday. It's for women only. Sorry, guys. But we stay in the solution there, and we're in AA literature. I have a sponsor, and she has a sponsor, and we both sponsor women. I'm privileged enough to have some of the gals here today. We did a road trip over the pass yesterday. I was glad they didn't shut down the freeway. I have a, the pass. So I have a sobriety date. It's 10/27 of 1996, for which is God's grace in this program. Forever, forever grateful. I didn't come in here thinking I wanted to stay that long. But today it is, AA is my life, and all the gifts therein are a direct result of this program and you people and the steps and inventory, et cetera. I want to thank the committee because I was supposed to be here last year, and some of these same women were going to come with me last year, but I had to have a surgery, and so this is my best thinking. Kirsten was going to ride over with me. I said, well, just lay me in the back seat. I'll be 2 days out. I'll stand up. It's only an hour. I wasn't going anywhere. I ended up having 3 surgeries last year, and life is in session, as my sponsor would say. And so I didn't get to make it to you, but you graciously invited me back. So what a joy, and health is good. I think we need to take our chairs and go outside. There's sun. There's like this bright light thing out there. I don't know what to do with it. So I also had Kirsten, I was driving, and I said, will you look up the history of this conference? Because I work on conferences. I'm passionate about conferences. And what was really cool as she was reading me the history behind this conference is I have a tie to a lot of your history. And so thank you to the committee that is taking this pocket of enthusiasm and keeping it here for us. The bright light, the shining light, the hope, the laughter. I remember the first time I laughed in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was actually at Cornhuskers in Nebraska, which is part of the history. I knew Dick and Peggy, and I was about 6 months sober. I sobered up in October, and that conference was in August, and we had carloads from Des Moines, Iowa, where I sobered up, that would go to that conference, and Clancy spoke at that conference as well. And There was about 3,000 people. I know Fox Hall because the Thursday night Fox Hall meeting was in Des Moines, Iowa. My sponsor sobered up in Montana, and she had a male sponsor. There were no women in the groups that she went to, and there's Beartooth Mountain, and I would drive every year with carloads across that pass. We didn't quite have to drive so far this go-around, but just beautiful history in the message being carried and the enthusiasm and the solution in the message, and I am so excited to hear from our speakers and to get some of that and to get it from you, and I know some of the people in the room already, and I'm looking forward to meeting many more of you. So thank you for having me. So like I said, I have a sobriety date. Our instructions are to tell you what it was like, how it got, and what it's like today. The first two parts of that never change, right? But the second part is that life in session and those gifts. And so my job is to give that to you, and I'm going to tell you, I have a sobriety sister, Michael, who starts, and she says, let me tell you about my parents before I tell you my story. And I was probably running and gunning, and I got going probably in the womb long before I ever made it out into the real world. I had this beautiful hippie mother who was, the word revolution in that, in the reading that Trisha, and Trisha, I love you. I met Trisha at her Easy Does It Lane bonfire meetings. When I was moving from Des Moines, I'm going to just go into this for a second, but I was moving from Des Moines to AA in Washington, and my sponsor there said, get involved before you even get out the door, and the Grapevine had an article on how to find a new home group, and I called Ralph in Seattle, who had a connection, and he said, call Trisha and call Mary Elizabeth. And so I was already talking to her before I ever moved from one state to another. And she used to have these parties at Easy Does It Lane. So when I pulled up with a van full of people and they all rolled out when I opened the sliding door, she said, I'm going to like you. So we've gone back a long ways. But I had this beautiful hippie mom, and the revolution word in that reading, or revolute, I can't think of it exactly. I'm not one of those that's going to quote pages for you guys. I call you all honey because I can't remember your name after I've met you, but I love you all equally, so it's everybody's honey. But in that reading, that revolution, that fighting against and fighting with, and that has been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came in here, I had some resentments. I didn't even know they were called that. But part of it was at my childhood, and part of it was at this beautiful hippie mom, and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the solution, and you sharing your heart and your experience with me has allowed me forgiveness, and that's you're going to hear a lot of that in this. By doing the work, I've been able to have a power within me that can do for me what I could not do for myself. And when I came in here, I came in here to figure out how not to drink, but I wasn't even sure I wanted to do that for too long. It might have been more along the manage and control my drinking, and here I am. So, but that beautiful hippie mom, as I see her today, was fighting against her childhood and where she came from, and she had a hard one, and she fell in love with the 60s and the free spirit and drugs, rock and roll, sex, all of that. And what I found out through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is that she gave me some really amazing gifts and some of the things that she was seeking. But the childhood that I grew up in was filled with alcoholism, a lot of drugs, things that happened to little girls that shouldn't happen to little girls. It wasn't safe and it wasn't secure, and all I wanted was something different. I also had access through her to all sorts of things that kids shouldn't have access to. I'm scared to death my phone's going to go off, but I can't see a watch. So I have to see the big zoomed in time so I can keep us on time. But if it rings, I'm not techie. We'll do our best. I may toss it to you, Mary, run out the door. But somebody give me a clue if I can't see that clock back there. But the beauty of this childhood, it gave me so many gifts, and I can only see those gifts by having done the work today. But I have a sponsor that says you don't get to jump over it, go around it, dig under it, but you have to go through it. right? And I've been able to go through some of that to see the beauty. So I love rock and roll. I also, she was on a spiritual journey, and I had a God when I got to you, that deep down within. But I was doing foxhole prayers, you know, God, if you save me from this, I'll do this, this, and this, you know, and I was making deals with God in life, and me and God alone could not stay sober. I needed you. I needed that voice of my God and my understanding come in through you so that I could receive, and so much more, I needed the action steps so that I could actually experience the solution on the other side. A sponsor who could tell me ridiculous things that I would do just to prove her wrong most of the time. And then lo and behold, this different life, this life by design came to be as a result of that. So one of the gifts is that I had this mother who is exploring spiritually, and I had a metaphysical grandmother who loved the sciences, and I had a Catholic grandmother. So I've been dip-dunked, you know, no myoho rangikyo, and doing the, you know, I walked the streets of Seattle with the Hare Krishnas, and I lived on communes, and I cleaned peyote buttons and rolled a doobie before I was, you know, five. Like, I was doing it all. And it talks about in the book, we don't know the true from the false. Right, and in that childhood, I didn't know the true from the false. In my drinking, in my life, I didn't know a new design for living was even a design that I wanted. But these beautiful women allowed me this relationship of a God that I got to explore. But that relationship did not keep me sober. I also had such a resentment at this lifestyle that I wanted nothing to do with the alcohol and drugs that were offered to me at any point. I was willing to pick them up. I did not want to be like the alcoholic in my house. I had such a huge resentment at this childhood and what was happening or not happening to me that I didn't want anything like it. I didn't want anything to do with it. And I equated it. I even have, I found it not too long ago when I was, it's like 10, I wrote a note in a little journal that says, I'm not going to be anything like them. I can't believe my parents are offering me liquor and drugs, right? I didn't even know to name it alcohol. So it was there and it was around me. But like Michael says, and these parents, my mom was trying to do something different than was ever given to her. Alcoholics Anonymous allowed me to see that my alcoholism is my own. Nobody was out in my drinking story pouring the booze down my throat. And I will tell you, my story has a lot of drugs in it, but alcohol was my absolute companion through the exploration of all that. And I love our primary purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous. But it did travel through, and it helped me explore all the other different experiences. And it was offered to me very early on. So I held out. I held out, and I didn't drink. I didn't want anything to do with it. I was one of those late-stage drinkers and didn't pick up a drink until I was 14, you know. But I had a kid brother who was using it 9. I figured that's a long span, so I held out good. But if any of you know Dave Pistol, one of my heroes in AA, he used to say, you're right, you're right, you're right, until the nanosecond when you discover that you're wrong. Well, I think of him every time when I think about my first drink, because I was right about not drinking until the minute I picked up that drink. And then how wrong I had been the minute the effect of alcohol hit my system. And, you know, I've heard speakers talk about they got bigger and they got stronger and they got bigger and they got curvier. And for me, that wasn't my experience, but that first drink of alcohol is my story through Alcoholics Anonymous. It just repeated itself and looked a little different. But the minute the effect of alcohol hit my system, instead of any of this and that and this, what I got was a breath of relief. The weight of the world that I didn't even know I was carrying slid to the ground. It just fell off. It was magic. Alcohol became my best friend, my lover, my solution to life. And I didn't even know it. And that first night that I drank, I went and crossed over that line in the sand that I was going to have to redraw and redraw and redraw. Well, now that I've done this, I'm not going to do that. Well, now that I've done that, I'm not going to do that and that. Redraw. And every time I had to redraw a line in the sand, you know, they say a death by a thousand slices, right? Like I was just dying from the inside out. Now, alcohol was fun. I will tell you, I lived in Burien in Washington, part of Seattle. The minute I found out I was so wrong, and because I had access to all the goodies and I loved to drink, I was invited to join a gang. And I was the only girl in the gang, except for one other girl that lived out of state, supposedly. I never met her. But I became a part of this gang, and we clean up good in here, right? But I had spiked hair, leather, we ran the streets. I was still only a teenager. It sounds really tough, and it's not. I know a lot of tougher gangs. But I just went right into it. I was going to make up for lost time. Make up for lost time. And the reason that I'm telling you so much about the beginning of this part of my story is because when I got to you in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was unique. I was unique, and you did not have my story. And if you had my story, you would drink too. And I don't know if I'm going to tell this part, but I just talked to my sponsor in the back room about why I'm a little nervous today about telling this story. But this sponsor brought me in, and she took me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, line by line, page by page, and we discovered my alcoholism when it started, the history of it, before I turned 16. Because I needed to know that my uniqueness was long before the time that I was 16 years old. And it was. I was waking up and reaching for the effect produced by, before my feet even hit the floor, right? Long before I was 16. So those 2 years as I'm running and gunning, and truly putting my life in danger, but really all of your lives in danger, right? And what I was doing out there on the streets. And so she helped me get a sense of that. But when I was 15 years old, almost 16 years old, I was living in Ballard with my mother and my two brothers and my stepdad. And I had been sick with tonsillitis. And my mom had taken me to the ER. And at that point, you could get big penicillin shots. And they just put that in there. And she took me home and took care of me all day. And then she walked out the door that night. She was going to see my mother or my grandmother in Seattle down on 3rd Avenue and Pike. Had an apartment she had just rented, and she never came home. She just disappeared into thin air. And because my stepdad didn't have custody of my one brother and myself, he was the father of my youngest brother, we got yanked out of that home and thrown into it. We weren't allowed to see each other, and you know the story. You don't need the details, but it was hell. And for the next 2 years, almost 2 years, I had no idea where my mother was. She had just vanished into thin air. Tried to get the police to find her. We were putting on missing posters and all that stuff. 2 years later, almost before my high school graduation. Now, what do you do with that? You drink, right? But I don't know about you guys. I drink when somebody dies. I drink when a baby's born. I drink when I get a job, and I drink when I lose a job. Like, when it's sunny outside or it's raining outside, I'm going to drink. And that was what my sponsor helped me see before we went into this part of my story, because I drank over some of this. I drank to numb it out. I drank to feel it, right? I just drank these feelings. And this is what I love about emotional sobriety. I have as much of a risk today to drink with my emotional sobriety as I did when I walked in the door. Today I have more to lose than I did when I walked in the door. But right before graduating from high school, they walked into my workplace and they let me know that they had found my mother's body, and she was listed as the first victim of the Green River Killer. And we were baffled. We didn't know what, like, nobody had investigated her disappearance as such. Oof. And so what do you do with that? Well, you drink. you drug, you numb it out, you feel it, you just drink. And so that was my uniqueness when I got to you. If you had my story, you would drink too. If you had to go through a Mother's Day not knowing where your mom was, or later finding out that she was never, you would drink too. What I can tell you is, and by telling my story, and my first sponsor told me, you need to tell your story every time. I have met so many people that have had the same experience. And the wreckage of my past has been able to help others, as it says in our literature. And today, you know, when I got to sobriety, I maybe had told 10 people in a general way, right, that wasn't family and friends about that whole scenario. So, but that didn't make me an alcoholic. My drinking and my consumption made me an alcoholic. But I had to process that with you guys when I got to you. So my alcoholism, aside from that, went through my whole story. So it's classic. The thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys, is you guys have cooties. I catch things in here, things that I did not realize. Geographicals. I didn't know picking up in the middle of the night, moving someplace new for a new start was a geographical. I just thought that was, woo, here we go. You know, 86th out of a bar. I want to tell you, I got cut off in a bar on near beer when I was pregnant. Because non-alcoholic beer has alcohol in it, and I was in a dart tournament, and I was drinking all day. And the guy said, you can't have any more. You're equivalent to two beers right now, based on my non-alcoholic consumption. You know, blackouts. I thought I was the only one who was trying to piece together the night before. And back then it was video stores. You go in there and you go to pick a video, and I'd say, oh, this looks good. And my then husband would say, we watched that last week. I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, it was really good. Right? So I caught things in here with you. And one of the best things that I caught was the laughter that I experienced at Cornhuskers, the hope, the ability to look up from off the floor and into your eyes. And a lot of the places that happened is through that 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and peeling away the layers and getting honest, really honest with another human being. At the time, I lived in Des Moines, Iowa, and I went back to Washington to make those amends. And I would have physical reactions, literally physical reactions, going into Seattle, going past the exit in Ballard, anywhere near, like I would physically feel, right? And I had to go face that straight on. And before I did, I went around Des Moines, Iowa, and I asked all my heroes about their God. My sponsor said, go find the people of the biggest God that you'd like a relationship with, and ask them how they use that God in their life when it's hard, you know? And I had to move back to Washington State at one point. I didn't want to, and I was reminded, you love the mountains, you love the bay. I'm so in love with Washington State. Aren't we blessed to live here? This is awesome. And for our visitors, enjoy every second. We'll come enjoy your heaven too. But I love Washington State. And by peeling away the layers, which was the fear, which was that God within, me running my show says there's a limit. I can't go there. With a God of my understanding and Alcoholics Anonymous, I can do anything. It tells me that as long as my motive is right. So I was 30 years old, and I want to tell you that stepdad in that same house and some of the, well, you don't know his name. I shouldn't have said who. But there were some people in my world in my childhood that I didn't want to be like when I was a kid that ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous before I ever did. They were my example. They were my hero. If they could get sober, I could get sober, right? They became, I wonder why this one is coming up. They became my heroes. So it's coming up. I trust that. Here we go. One of the, before I sobered up, I got a phone call once, and the person on the other line, I hadn't seen them since I was 10 or 11 years old, but I recognized the voice in 2 seconds flat. And at that time, the phones were on the wall. For anybody young in here, plugged in, there's a cord. And I slid down the wall to the floor, and I had 2 young babies, and I was not sober yet, but I knew that voice, and he said, Melina, this is so-and-so, and I've been going back through my past, and what I did to you when you were a little girl was wrong, and I need to know how to make that right. And I said, do you have any children? He said, yeah, I have a daughter. And I said, don't you dare harm your daughter or let anybody do to her what you did to me. And I hung up the phone and I drank over that. I want to tell you that when I went to do my amends, that man who had harmed me when I was a little girl became my strength to make the amends. Oh, it's giving me, as we call them, God bumps. But he gave me the gift of having the courage to make that amends. At the time, I didn't know it was an amends. But when I went back to Washington State and I needed to make amends, I used the man that may have hurt me, one of them that had hurt me deeply, as one of my pieces of strength to go face people I needed to make it right with. Wow, I went on a sidetrack on that. Somebody must have needed that in the room, I hope. Okay, where was I before that? So I don't even know where I left off. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's so many great gifts that came out of not just showing up to a meeting or not being like all of this. I needed to do all of it, get involved in service, work the steps, sponsor. But it's interesting to me because the further I go, the bigger the gift gets. So when I was willing to be sponsored and to take direction and to do a fifth step, I got a huge gift and relief in a way to have a new life by design, to be rocketed into the fourth dimension. I don't know about you guys as alcoholics. I always keyed in on those big words, right? Like, I want the experience. I'm an alcoholic. I want full gusto. So whether it's revolution or rocketed into the fourth dimension, I want that. I want the big bang. But what I got in these gifts is not only the first time through, but more importantly, when I took the women that I sponsor through, when I got to hear somebody else's experience and share mine, all of a sudden the weight, like the drink, right? The weight of the world just fell to the ground because I was able to use what were my deepest, darkest secrets to have somebody go, oh, you've done that too, or you have that experience. I would have never thought that, right? Like, we're sitting in this intimate space, sharing our experience, strength, and hope for the common solution of recovery. And for me today, like I said, is the recovery of emotional sobriety. Like, I have a way of life. Life is in session, you guys. Life is in session. I was married to a beautiful man who gave me two beautiful daughters. And we were married for 30 years, and the drink and the drugs were sexier than our marriage was, right? That's my interpretation of what it was. But the disease was in our house, and yet again, we had to finish that up. And I have some of the best gifts from that, and I can share experience with other women. I sponsored people married, and I was married when I got sober, and, you know, I tell them, if a date is not on your couch watching a movie, a date is him picking you up at the front door, you going out on a date, and him dropping you off. Because my experience is I met my then husband in the middle, and there was the U-Haul, the AA U-Haul. We went on one date and never spent another night apart for like 2 years, right? Like, we moved in right away. But so I tell him, don't shave your legs, put on your granny panties. You know, go out on a date, make sure nothing happens. And then I lost my marriage and I had to learn how to date. Oh my gosh. Talk about using the principles in all your affairs. So I found a beautiful man right now. I have four absolutes, and the man that I'm dating right now, it came out of the ideals of the sex inventory. And I had to make those ideals before I met him so that I could stay true. Right? When I go out and live a life, there are ideals that I want to live by. I want to invite God into every nook and cranny of my life today. I have the most intimate relationship with my sponsor. She knows all those nooks and crannies. And she can see things before I ever see things, but she can't if I'm not current with her. And I have a 5 o'clock call every Tuesday morning with my sponsor in Florida. And I have a sobriety sister that I call as well on Tuesday mornings at 5:30, and she's in Connecticut. And those two women know me inside and out. There is not another person out there that knows me as intimately. The gentleman I'm dating certainly does not need to know me that intimately. So the ideals and trying to live by them. Grace and dignity was not something that I had when I came to you. I actually wore a lot of spandex peeled out in my Camaro in the parking lot and got called out for maybe I should act like I was married instead of having an ego looking for attention. So many things got cleaned up. But what I want to talk about, because through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and through being shown this way of life that I did not come in here for, that forgiveness went backwards and went forwards in the form of expectations. I was able to see the childhood as everybody doing the very best they could, the people that I might define as being hurt by as being God's kids too. And there's this beautiful prayer in the big book. This is a sick, sick man. How can I be of use? I love the St. Francis prayer that is in the 12s and 12. And understanding and compassion and to love another human being, even when they're not lovable. It's great to love somebody when they're lovable, right? Because and to understand sometimes I can't. I can't make sense of senseless. I can't make sense of a serial killer. I can't make sense of child abuse. I can't make sense of that. And when I did that inventory, that sponsor, and right now we're going back through the steps. I have 8. We're doing one on the way home. I just set up another, but I have 8 fifth steps I need to do in the next 2 weeks. Woo! I'm going to be so spiritually fit. Y'all come to Bellingham, Washington. But going back to the roots and the causes and the conditions, and then seeing that everybody was doing the best they can, whether this is a sick, sick man or not, or whether my mother wasn't the mother I wanted her to be. There was no Wonder Bread and white picket fence. You know, we were the co-op brewers using cod liver oil. And but she did the very best that she could do, and she loved me well. And like I started, I had this beautiful hippie mom today, but I didn't have a beautiful hippie mom when I got to you. You guys allowed me to have a perception shift, as Clancy says, to see it from a different light, from a different understanding, from a different love, from a different compassion. But I had to go through this process because I still had this uniqueness around the murder of my mother. And I ended up in a courtroom behind Gary Ridgway. And the worst I could do, because through all the trials, there's all these stages and there's like bulletproof glass. But at one point, almost 2 years later, I'm in a courtroom. And literally, I've got 2 detectives on either side of me, and they're each carrying a weapon. I know how to shoot. I lived in Alaska. And I'm thinking, you know, I have access right now to somebody that I was so hateful at, so unforgiving, so not understanding. Doesn't make sense. It's not right. Forgiveness does not make the action right. Forgiveness allows me to no longer be a hostage to your action that wasn't right. Forgiveness is allowing myself to be set free by where I want to be. And sitting behind him, the worst I could do was probably a spit wad, because you guys gave me the freedom of understanding that that's not my thing. That's between him and God. My thing is that I loved my mom, and if I were to sit down with her, she'd be like, why are you wasting your time? Go be a mom to those beautiful girls that you have. Right? I lost my life, but you didn't. How you live yours is your choice today. But they ended up taking her off that list, and it's now an unsolved case. And so I had to start all over again. I had a resentment at that. Like, okay, God, how much work do you want me to do? Right? So apparently work is always ahead. Ready to go. What do they say? Just, you know, this too passes. This too shall pass. But all of it, the good, the bad, the hard, the easy, it's life in session. It's a moving opportunity to be in relationship with God, to be in relationship with you. And I love that today, but I certainly didn't love it when I first got here. I've learned it today, and I'm going to continue to learning how to do it. But the what I had Tricia read also goes into these I couldn't have picked a better life, you guys. So that sound, it could sound tragic to you, but my life is so good today, even with all the losses. And I want to tell you a few of those stories. I love St. Francis so much that I went over to Italy and hiked the St. Francis Trail by myself. Most people know the Camino. I toted a backpack. I'm going into the woods. And literally there, the trail's not marked. And sometimes, I mean, I went down a gully. I thought, I may not be getting out of here. I had a spot finder in case of an emergency so I could helicopter out. I spoke in Portland once and told the story, and one of the gals decided to do it. And she did, and she's so brave. She went even further than I did. But at one point, she had a call. Helicopters came in and got her out of there, right? Like, it's remote in some of these places. You can get lost. It's not a trail like the Camino, but it's part of the Camino. And I went over there on my mom's 70th birthday, my 20-year sobriety birthday, and a couple other little things that wrapped into that beautiful package. But I went over there because I wanted a silent retreat with this God of my understanding who had blessed my life in such a free way to live. And I have, like I said, this amazing life. So let me leave you with and that I could tell you so many stories about the St. Francis Trail. I ran face to face with Fernando, a big bull with a ring. And he and I had a stare down. I was worried about wolves and wild animals. I did not know I was going to have to be worried about a bull. But God took care of that situation too in an incredible way. But one of the stories, just for fun, is that, you know, there's been so many times where I had to step out on faith and just trust a God of my understanding. And in the big book, it talks about intuitive thought, right? And I remember in the beginning when I first got sober, I leaned in on that sponsor because my thinking didn't make sense. It made sense to me. Run it by her. It didn't always make sense. You know, and the actions that I was taking, I was stepping on the toes and they would retaliate. Or I had such expectations that you would behave that way I needed you to behave so I could be happy, right? So we're peeling away those layers. And I'm leaning in on this sponsor so much that was almost an overdependence on that sponsor. And she took me to the lines in the big book, and it says we rely on intuitive thought. And sometimes it may be absurdly incorrect, right? Or it doesn't say that. We may make absurd choices or something. Nothing's incorrect according to God's plan. So let me change that. But I'd call her, I'd say, I don't know what to do. And she'd say, have you prayed about it? And I'm like, oh, okay. And I call her back, I still don't know what to do. There's a deadline to this choice I need to make, or this decision, or I don't know what to do. And she'd like remind me that, Melina, there is no wrong decision if you're inviting God into this. There is no wrong decision. You might look back and say, hey, I'd do that differently. But at the time you made the decision inviting God in, and sometimes it's not clear, but it's the journey, right? Like, trust on that. And so I moved away from my dependence, but I need a human being still to hear my great ideas. Because if I'm thinking it, it's right. It's brilliant, don't you know? Right? That I know well enough through my experience as well. Sometimes I need a sponsor to kind of guide me through some of that stuff. And so just relying on that. And so there's been times in my life where I've had to lean in and rely and make choices. And I ended up in this job that I shouldn't have even been in that job. At one point, I called Dave, and I said, I'm not smart enough for this. One time, I called that first sponsor. I'm like, they're going to kick me out of the room. I'm not smart enough for this. That imposter syndrome. And that first sponsor said, wait till they tap you on the shoulder and ask you to leave, and then you can go. They never asked me to leave. Dave said, Sugar, you got this. Just keep doing it and see where God takes you. So I ended up in this job that I sometimes still don't know that I deserve to have in my head, and then I bring God into that. But it took me to Iceland. And there's a story in the big book that talks about the Eskimo will come by, right, for an alcoholic. And I, like I started to say, you can go anywhere and do anything. I have sponsees that have done the most trips to India in the middle of nowhere, right? Like, I love life. I want that big gusto, but I'm in this job, and somehow I'm training in London, and we're going to do a little trip back through Iceland, and I was gifted this day in Iceland on a private helicopter tour, and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is the rich and the famous. And truly, Beyonce had been in that same helicopter with her crew the weekend before, right? So for real. And I've done that. What, Minaj, who's the big singer? Anyways, I was filming a home in Dubai once, and they were doing a video with the superstars. I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, what? How am I here, right? I've got spiked hair and leathers, and I'm running the streets of Burien. But I'm in these places. So this one, though, I just love this story. God is so good. So I'm in Iceland. I'm on this helicopter tour. I'm with some folks. There's four of us as passengers, and there's two pilots. And so we start out on the lava beaches, and then we end up on the waterfalls. And they're stopping, like they're landing, letting us out, playing. So we're having this private tour. Crazy. Then we're on the mossy side of a waterfall, and the sprays. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is so insane. And then the pilot says, I've been flying since I was 19 years old, and he's my age, so in his 50s. And he said, this is the second one of the two most visible flight days that I've ever flown before. So I can actually take you to the highest peak, and we're going to make time for that. We're like, yes. So we go to the top of the volcano, like at the top, and we land in the snow, and we get out, and we make snow angels. Right? Not dressed for this at all. We're doing, I'm like, yes, there's the gusto. Like, this is my life. This is crazy. And I, you know, I'm in tears and thank you, God. And I can't, you know, and there's lows as high as this high, I'm telling you. But here's the high, right? It's in session. And all of a sudden we're getting back in and I'm kind of straggling towards. And I get up to this group and the pilot says, so as we go out, I'm going to circle the top of the volcano, and I'm going to drop something into it. And my little mind goes immediately to judgment. What are you dropping into this pristine? Da, 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 da. And he said, it's actually a coin. And he said, today I'm 18 years sober, and it's my 17-year-old coin, and I'm going to go pick up my 18-year coin tonight with my daughter. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. Now, not everybody that I'm with knows, and you can tell anybody, give away my phone number, but I pulled him aside, and I said, are you a friend of Bill Wilson? And he said, yes, we're still in touch. And I'm like, yeah, I'm there too with you. And so that Eskimo can come by with a bottle of booze, or you can get taken to the top of a volcano, right? But I can't get to the volcano if I don't climb up one step at a time of the mountain, if I don't do the work and get in the solution with you. And a lot of times the best change and growth in that solution is when it's hard to do and I don't want to. And I so wanted to be here with you guys this weekend. Thanks for having me.